In the last week of Jesus' life, I think we have something interesting that takes place. A lot of interesting things take place, obviously. But one of the things that happens in this last week is we kind of get a look at sort of what was going on outside the circle of Jesus and the disciples. All the way through the Gospels, what we see is the disciples and them interacting and Jesus teaching them and them Jesus teaching, you know, the people in the communities, of course. But here we begin to see how sort of the outside world starts to react to him. How did the rest of humanity react to this Jesus person and the things that he did? How about those in power? Those in the seat of the governing authorities. How did they react? How did they respond to Jesus and who he was? One of the things that happens in this last week, this climax of Jesus' life and work, is we see revealed the true nature and the depth of human sinfulness. Even in the seats of power, both religious and secular, sin has corrupted us. See if you don't see a number of things here as we go through and discuss them. Our world in microcosm, in small pieces. Number one, the first thing we see is a betrayal and arrest. Think of it this way. There was a leak in the Attorney General's office. Or there's a leak in the government that somebody's funneling information out to people that shouldn't get it. There's a spy in our midst. Or something like that. Judas leaked information as to Jesus' whereabouts, didn't he? He did it for profit. Something people do all the time. They spy because they're bitter. They want money. Maybe they're promised a certain amount of power. Whatever their motivations are, people leak information. And they do it because it's personal for them. Betrayal. It's one of the most insidious sins because it involves people you thought you could trust. People you depended on. It hurts more because it's people you thought you could depend on. And Judas betrays him with a symbol of love. He comes up and he kisses him. How ironic. How utterly insidious that betrayal occurs with a symbol of love. But during this incident, this particular thing, not only do we have a leak, but we have collateral damage. An innocent bystander is hurt in this situation. Peter draws out a sword. We know it's Peter from several different accounts. But all the Gospels mention this particular occasion, and a servant's ear is cut off. In Luke chapter 22 and verse 51 is where we see that Jesus actually heals him. We don't see that in the other Gospels. Luke, maybe because he's the physician, he recognizes that something else happened here. Jesus heals this person. And he tells Peter and the others, you know, enough of this. This is not why I'm here. That there is some collateral damage in this situation. The crowds have come with clubs seeking a criminal. Why didn't they come during the day for everybody to see? Why wasn't this done out in the open? Why wasn't an indictment handed down and whatever their legal system was, there had to be some charge given. But there wasn't. It was done at night because they knew the people would have rebelled had they done it during the day. They knew they didn't have a charge. And so it's really political expediency that drives this arrest. First, as to why they did not arrest him during the day, they couldn't because people in power feared the crowds and because they knew, they absolutely knew they didn't have a legitimate reason to arrest him. And so they did it at night. Second, the high priest assesses the situation with a kind of cold-hearted and cynical pragmatism. In John chapter 11, actually somewhat before, but right on the verge of Jesus being arrested, in John chapter 11, verses 49 through 50, the high priest makes the following statement. He says, one of them, Caiaphas, who was high priest that year, said to them, this is after they've begun to talk about, we need to arrest him, we need to get rid of this guy. He says, you know nothing at all. Nor do you understand that it is better for that one man should die for the people not that the whole nation should perish. Do you see what he says there? We got to have a sacrifice. We have to have a sacrificial lamb. Somebody's got to pay the price, even if he's not guilty. That's a kind of cold-hearted pragmatism that suggests people's lives are merely pawns and tools manipulated to maintain power. We don't care how we do it. If a few innocent people have to be hurt, maybe even killed, we still get to maintain our power. Those of us, perhaps, who know how the game is played, we're not totally surprised by this. But the bald use of human life for such a thing is still a little shocking. It's still a little shocking to see that kind of cynicism and pragmatism that clutches so strongly to power, they're willing to let a few innocent people perish. Here, just one, but here, a pretty important one. And so we have, in this last week of Jesus' life, betrayal and arrest. And now we move to trial. They don't have enough for an indictment, and they know it. And there are several things that indicate they didn't have enough for an indictment. It's very interesting as you read about totalitarian regimes. Both Adolf Hitler and Joseph Stalin had trials. They called them more like show trials. You know, they were trying to demonstrate to the world, or I should say falsely demonstrate to the world, that they had a system of justice. Justice was the very last thing that was going on in those show trials. It was just that. It was just for show. So that perhaps those who didn't know better would have thought, well, they seem to be legitimate. They seem to have some legitimate charges. Most of the time they were trumped up charges simply to get rid of the opposition. And so what we have here in the life of Christ, we have exactly the same thing. In Matthew chapter 26, verses 59 through 61, listen to what is said. Now the chief priests and the whole council were seeking false testimony against Jesus that they might put him to death, but they found none, though many false witnesses came forward. It says in other places, their testimonies didn't even stand very good scrutiny. Mark chapter 15, verses 55 through 59. I'm sorry, I believe that's Mark 14, 55 through 59. Now the chief priests and the whole council were seeking testimony against Jesus to put him to death, but they found none, same as what Matthew said. For many bore false witness against him, but their testimony did not agree. They came forward and they conflicted each other. They contradicted each other's testimony. They couldn't really come up with any serious, legitimate indictment charge. You know, if there was such a thing as a grand jury, the grand jury would have said, we can't charge the guy. You can't take this to trial because we don't have enough evidence. One of them, they finally came forward and said, well, destroying the temple and rebuilding it. That's what we heard this guy say. Well, you know, somebody tell me what's the grounds for indictment there, other than maybe you sound a little crazy. You know, I mean, it's hardly a legal charge to be, you know, to say something crazy, especially in our society. We believe in free speech. You know, you're free to say dumb things. You know, you're free to say crazy things. You're not free to say certain things, but, you know, even if this was a preposterous claim, it wasn't a charge. And then the charge that they finally used to sentence him to death was that he claimed to be the Messiah. And once again, you kind of say, okay, well, so what? There was no claim. I mean, there was no law against making a claim like that, other than the claim that, you know, what he made in John chapter 8, you know, I am, basically called himself God. No, that was perhaps the only legitimate thing they could come up with. But it wasn't a legal indictment in any kind of sense of Roman law. And so they're kind of stuck here. They're floundering to try to find some way. You know, it's not about whether or not he really deserves to die. They want him dead. They're going to pervert justice no matter what. They're going to get their way no matter what. And Jesus makes it very clear. Look, you know, they start asking him questions. He says, look, I have spoken openly about this. I haven't tried to hide anything. You know, this was not some clandestine plot to overthrow the government. Well, actually, it kind of was a sense of overthrowing, wasn't it? God was instituting his kingdom And if you remember back in the book of Daniel, what was the kingdom of God going to do? It was going to destroy all other kingdoms. Now, we know from the way it finally ends up playing itself out that indeed the kingdom of God becomes the most powerful kingdom in the world. But somehow it learns to coexist. It needs some system of human government to be in place. Paul goes into that in the book of Romans and makes that fairly clear. But the fact is, Jesus here, he's got nothing to hide. John chapter 18 in verse 19 through 23 make it very clear that Jesus, he spoke openly. You know, why didn't you come and arrest me when I was speaking openly to you? I've spoken openly to the world. I've always taught in synagogues and in the temple where all the Jews come together. I have said nothing in secret. Why are you asking me this? And the question is a very legitimate one. If not, maybe he's being pretty bold here and throwing it back into their court. They knew better. And he's making it very clear. You knew better. Because this isn't new. You're asking me this stuff. You just want me to say something. You're trying to trip me up. You know, which is so typical of what a person wants to. They want to somehow be able to say, look, here's what he said. You know, he made this mistake. He's wrong. And Jesus said, look, I've been saying this all along. It's nothing new. In fact, at some point, he even told the disciples, one of these days, you're going to shout all this stuff from the rooftops. We're not trying to hide anything here. The trial, however, was a sham. There wasn't any evidence to hand down an indictment. The Apostle Paul experienced the same hypocrisy with his own people later on, did he not? They tried to indict him. They say he tried to destroy the temple, blah, blah, this, blah. You know, they were all trumped up charges. It wasn't about justice. It was about getting rid of their enemy. But then there's a kind of a third step here that we might simply call an appeal to a higher court. Now, let's make it very clear. The Jews here didn't try to appeal to the higher court to get him off. They appealed to a higher court to get the court to rule the way they wanted him, the way they wanted it to be ruled. Like many appeals, this was not meant to get justice. It was meant to seek the ruling they wanted. It had nothing to do with justice. Jesus was sent to Pilate. And it's very the dynamic here to me between Pilate and the Jews is very interesting. It's very telling about what John remembers them saying here. So, when they sang to Pilate, and Pilate asked them the charge, what do they say? Well, if this man were not doing evil, we would not have delivered him over to you. What kind of answer is that? Does that really tell? All right, here's the charge. All they're saying is, how dare you question our motives? You know, would we do this otherwise? Well, Pilate doesn't answer, but he thinks, yeah, you probably would. In fact, in some point, I think it's in Matthew, Matthew says, Pilate knew the reason they handed him over was out of jealousy. That was the motivation. Well, of course they didn't have a charge. They didn't need a charge. They wanted it done and they were going to do everything they could to manipulate the system, which is exactly what they ended up doing. Pilate, however, in verse 38 says, I'm sorry, chapter 18 and I have so many verses here, I'm getting them all mixed up. It is verse 38. After he had said this, he went back outside to the Jews and told them, I find no guilt in him. From the standpoint of Roman law, from the standpoint of being in the court system that was prevalent during the day and that ruled during the day, he had nothing to indict Jesus with. They couldn't give him a charge. In fact, Pilate just, you know, take care of this yourself. I want out of this nonsense. And so in chapter 19 and verse 12, after he talks to him further, it says Pilate sought to release him. But the Jews cried out, if you release this man, you are not Caesar's friend. Everyone who makes himself a king opposes Caesar. Well, that was kind of enough. Even if it wasn't a real charge, he could see the Jews were going to make trouble for him. They were going to lie about him. It didn't matter whether this was true or not. They were going to lie about him. And even when the crowd cries out for him to be crucified, Pilate asks in Matthew 27 and verse 23, why? What evil has he done? Now, by the time you get past the praetorium out to the crowd, the crowd's in a frenzy. They're in an absolute frenzy. And the high priests have whipped up the crowd. They have made them, you know, a participants in this perversion of justice. because they want him gone, and they will do absolutely anything they can do to get rid of him. Doesn't matter whether it's true or not. And so what you end up with here, not justice, but mob rule. That's what it is. It's mob rule. Pilate knew that jealousy had driven the Jewish leaders to have Jesus arrested, Matthew 27 and verse 18. When the choice is given them between Jesus and Barabbas, the mob had been whipped into a frenzy by them by that time, and they refused to be placated with justice. They want what they want. Be very wary of protesters who have to get their own way by intimidation. That is a clear indication that something is wrong. A lot of times those demonstrators have no reasonable or justifiable pretext. That's why they use intimidation. They have no sense of justice. They have no good reason for doing it. And there are people in this world who seek their own way by threats of violence and by simply angrily shouting their demands. Get loud, get violent. That's what's happening here. They got loud, they threatened violence. And it's because mob rule does not want to go through the normal process of going through the courts or other legitimate channels or even talking further about the situation. They want what they want. You have here mob rule. Mob rule instigated by the leaders. They threaten violence because it is their default means of getting their way. And unfortunately, or actually fortunately, we'll kind of talk about that in a moment, but in this case, Pilate does what is expedient. He gives in to them. Perhaps Pilate himself doesn't think this life is worth the aggravation of true justice. He should not have handed him over. But mob ruled. The mob won. The leaders won. Betrayal, arrest, and show trial all demonstrate the worst of what we are. Jesus could not be indicted legitimately, so mob rule took over. People didn't want justice. They wanted Jesus out of the way. Fortunately for us, the plan backfired. For God indeed used it not only against them, but in a very ironic, paradoxical, loving sort of way. God used it for them as well. The innocent victim came back to haunt the enemies in a way they could never have imagined, but it's no longer a haunting for us, is it? It came back as a blessing. And indeed, that will be a bit more of our discussion for next week. For this week, think about what you see here. It's us. It's us and all of our horror. Floyd, let's stand and sing.